Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for learning with us this whole year. We're going to close out our discussion for the year, and I'd like to thank Camelia for always taping this class and making it available on yutorah.org. And to Richard Hartzman, who puts it up, who you may recall made Aliyah some years ago. So today we'll close out our discussion on siblings in Tanakh, family members in Tanakh. The 2 years ago we did husbands and wives, then we did parents and children, and then we've been doing siblings. So we're closing out our discussion with David's children. And sorry to say, David's children are, and sometimes as far as brotherhood is concerned, it's sometimes as dysfunctional as, when brothers start killing one another and they're vying for a throne, it's not a good situation. We learned that a parent is never jealous of a child's accomplishment, but brothers, sure as anything, are jealous of their sibling's accomplishment, especially when they think that whatever the other brother accomplished comes at their expense. It starts with Cain and Hevel. Cain brings the korban first. He copies me and then does it better and gets all the credit. Mm-hmm. I started this. I was the one who thought of it. He only brought it because I did. He wouldn't have brought it. So some of these things are hard to understand in and of themselves. Last time we discussed the personality of Amnon. Right? We don't like him. He's a rogue. Right? I'm not going to discuss Tamar in more than we did last week, because I'd like to move on to Amnon's brothers. Okay, the other two brothers, remember their names begin with the letter Aleph, are Avshalom and Adoniyahu. Avshalom and Adoniyahu. Okay, when David said that man who stole the sheep must pay fourfold, so David suffered fourfold. There are two different opinions in Chazal over who were the four children that died, right? So one opinion has it that it's the baby that was the product of the union with Bathsheba at first, then Amnon, then Avshalom, then Adoniyahu. Problem is, Adoniyahu did not die in David's lifetime. He died afterwards. Okay, but it's all right. He still died. The fourth opinion is that Tamar committed suicide, according to a Medrash. It's not written in the Tanakh. She said, "Ana ani oleich escher pasi," you know, as if though she said, "I have no reason to live anymore." So she would have, if that is true, she did die in David's lifetime. Therefore, the four sheep would be the baby, Tamar, Amnon, and Avshalom. All right. So what we see here is a profound midah keneged midah, that David uprooted the family of Bathsheba and Uriah, and therefore his family is uprooted. I'm not making up that midah keneged midah. The prophet Natan does. And he said, because you did so with the sword of Ammon, that the sword will chase after you for the rest of your life. So that's really the rest of Shmuel Bet. And I'm sorry to say it. It involves David's family being uprooted.
Does Natan say that, or does he say it regarding the 10 concubines?
No, that then he says afterwards, and because you did this secretly, I will do midah keneged midah, I'll take your women openly, mm-hmm. in front of, before the sun. You tried to cover it up. I'm going to make something happen to you that won't be covered up. Everyone will know what Avshalom is doing.
But before that, he does say the sons?
He says you did this. He says that you... there's two parts to his, he's a very long speech, Natan.
Yeah.
And the two parts to his speech is one connected the breakup of a family, one connected the fact that you used the sword of the Ammonites. And each one attached David, some are the same. When Avshalom attacks his father with the sword, that's the breakup of the family and the sword in the same person. Right? The other is Sheba ben Bichri, Shimi ben Gera, all kinds of things in the for the rest of Shmuel Bet. The greatness of David at the end of from the story about Sheba and on is that he falls significantly, but he gets back up. It's all about redemption. That's what the Tanakh is about. Tanakh is profoundly about our failures. No prophet gets the job fully done, except Yonah. And that's the irony, is that Yonah wants to fail. The only prophet who's a total success is the one who wants to fail. He's not even good at failing. Right?
Well, there are two jobs. Right? There are two jobs. One is achieving redemption. The other is predicting the catastrophe.
But the point is, Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kom, is that the Tzadik falls, but always knows to get up. He doesn't stay down. And that failure is very much part of our human condition, right? As long as you stick around, hang in long enough to stay in the game. All right, so today we will close our discussion with Avshalom, Adoniyahu, and Shlomo. I want to end up with Shlomo to be on a good note. Because he's sort of a dark horse. David has much older children. Mm-hmm. If you're living in Israel at this time, you would probably prefer, the king is 70, mm-hmm. he has sons who are probably in their 30s, 40s even. Mm-hmm. You probably prefer a 35-year-old to a 12-year-old, right? Do 12-year-olds make good kings? I don't know, but we haven't tried it yet, What's interesting is that of all the kings in the entire Sefer Shmuel and Melachim, I can't say Shlomo is the only one, because Shaul, it also doesn't tell us how old he was when he was king. But every other one, we are told how old that king was when he became king. But not Shlomo. Right? And he ruled for 40 years. Right? And there are some hints. The text refers to him as young, and he's a Na'ar. Right? Could be 14, could be 16, right? But Chazal say he was 12. All right, so yes.
Sorry, I had a question from before. When you mentioned that Tamar, according to that she had committed suicide, is that in contradiction with the Gemara and Masechta Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Beis Lamed Aleph, that when she was raped, she emasculated?
Why would that be a contradiction?
Because
she committed suicide.
Why did she need to kill herself?
Not everyone who commits suicide acts rationally.
Anybody who commits suicide isn't.
Okay.
Where does it say she killed herself?
No, that's the Medrash that says that she
but
lost.
But it's a Medrash,
four...
but it's not in the Gemara.
No, it's. So I think it's a Psikta. It's brought down in Chazal. I don't know. Gemaras are not the only Agadotas. So the Gemara says in Maseches Yuma upstairs. The Gemara Maseches Yuma says that the four who died to make up the four for the four sheep were does not include Tamar. But this is a separate Medrash, I'm just saying. Why would a Medrash disagree with those four? Because one of those four did not die in David's lifetime. So to say, because you said V'ada Keves Yishalem Arba Atayim, that you should lose four children, I mean, look, I'm sorry to say, if you're a human being, you know, your children will die, just not in your lifetime. They'll die 70 years after you die, I don't know, 40 years after you die. You know what I'm saying? Everyone's child is going to die, right? Because everyone dies, right? So to say that David's child that died after he died everyone's child dies after they die, you know what I'm saying? Because so for the Medrash to make sense, it has to be that the four died in his lifetime, right?
Well, he died in the struggle for succession.
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah, he died as part of the. We'll get to that shortly.
I once heard it a Leviat. It is not the way in the world for a parent to bury a child.
No, I know. We don't have to hear that at Leviat, and it's patently obvious. It's okay. Children are supposed to say Kaddish for their parents. All right. All right. So that's just the question of what Chazal meant when what should be the determining explanation of Uva'ad HaKeves Yishalem Arba Tayim. Okay, so let's learn about what made Avshalom do what he did. Perek Yud Gimel. Perek Yud Gimel starts. Vehi Acharechein. No, I'm sorry. Yud Gimel is what we did last week. Yudalek. Okay, I think we towards the end of last class.
It's you down.
I mentioned that vengeance is a dish best served cold. When Tamar was violated by her half-brother or step-brother, Avshalom told her, listen, hold off on your anger. I know you want resolution. I know you want justice. I wouldn't call going after Amnon vengeance. I would call it justice. Right? So, but he tells her, listen, stay, lie low. He's the son of the king. He's supposed to be the next king, right? I have a plan, okay? Right now, usually that it's bad enough that the person is violated. I've spoken to people who have been abused by teachers or something, and they said when I tried to say something to prevent him from doing it to others, they called me a liar. They called that was worse than the original abuse, right? So when she doesn't get any justice out of the situation, but Avshalom says, listen, my sister, hold off. He's on his guard now. He's too strong for me to do anything. Let me catch him after some time when he sees that I've been calm with him, I'm okay with him, right? When he sees that I'll catch him off his guard, I'll get him. So that's what happened at the end of chapter 13, where Avshalom was shearing sheep. That's a very, very celebratory event. He's shearing sheep in the north of Israel. He asks David, I want to make a celebration out of this sheep shearing. Please take all my brothers with me. Right? David senses there's something wrong.
What verse are we at?
I'm paraphrasing chapter 13, and we're going to start with chapter 14. It says, let me send send all the brothers up north. David senses, you can tell from that David is a little nervous about it. He goes, no, why do you have to take all your brothers? Just go with a small little group. He goes, no, it's a celebration. I really want to do this. Right? Sheep shearing is an annual event that I'm sure you know in ancient world was celebratory. So Avshalom specifically asks for Amnon to come as well. It's not the same without Amnon. He's the next king. He's the big shot. So David reluctantly lets him go after he asks two or three times. And that's where Avshalom instructs some of his lads, get him very drunk, a sign that he must have been very strong and always surrounded. Get him drunk, get his guards drunk, get them all of them drunk. We're having a great time here. And then when they're off the guard, take care of him. Right? So then word got back to David that all of his sons were killed by Avshalom. Mm-hmm. And then the guy who started all of this, Yonadav, heard that all the sons were killed, that David said all the sons were killed, and he says, no, it's not all the sons, it's just that miserable Amnon that he killed because he raped his sister. Now wait a second, this is opportunist, Ben-Benoshel opportunist, right? He's the one who gave him the advice. What's he saying? He's that rogue Amnon. He just killed that schlub for raping his sister. You were the one who told him to do that. So I the way I explained it last week, I have my answer. Unless he's really a rogue, right? The answer is no, he never meant for him to do that. That wasn't, he never said to do that. That wasn't the plan. The plan was either to arrange it so that Tamar would fall in love with him, or that he would fall out of love with her, one way or the other. To make it that it's not a violation, so to say. It's not that he's taking her against her will. From the story last week, at least the way the Gemara right in there where you just quoted, it's the same Gemara, that says that she was what bothered her most was that she should be taken the way she was taken as a basula out of wedlock. But she says, if you want to marry me, let's do this right. We'll set up a wedding. Your father will not prevent this from happening. So some other Mephoshim can't imagine her saying that. And they prefer to say that she was just stalling for time. Let him ask the king, and then I'll say, no, please don't. And the king will say, don't you go near her. Okay.
That's consistent with Chacham Ma'od, meaning too clever by half.
Oh, yeah.
It could
be that he outsmarted himself.
Yeah.
He didn't realize that a man who's sick enough to fall in love with his half-sister can also fall in love with his mother. Right? Remember the way I explained it, that he wanted her to behave with him like a mother, you know, feeding him and sweating over the hot stove. And
but you have the phrase in here, Yadati Kiatem Ambi Mechem Tamut Kachma. Idea.
Yeah. Can
be used ironically.
Yes. Yeah. And Chachma dies with you, right? So, sometimes you have to wonder. Some very smart people do some very stupid things, mm-hmm. or as I think Forrest Gump said, "Stupid is as stupid does."
Right? Too clever by half.
So okay, all right. So now when Avshalom decides to take this and to go someplace with this and use the situation now, where his father's old, the only older brother who would vie for the throne is now dead, right? So I think everyone can agree that this is not the time to go after your father.
Who's older?
It's
Avshalom Kalev.
Kilav is older, but that's why I carefully worded my statement. Anyone who's vying for the throne is no longer older than Avshalom. So he doesn't, you know, he wants nothing to do with any of that. Okay? So when Avshalom because when Avshalom killed Amnon, he had to flee Israel. He was worried that the wrath of the king or the wrath of the people, you don't kill a son of the king, even if you are the son of a king. So he fled to Chutz Laaretz, to his grandfather's house, his mother's father, the king of Geshur. Right? He was received there. He was accepted there. But and David didn't invite him to come back for 2 years. Until Yoav arranged for his return with some fancy footwork with a smart woman, a woman from Tekoa. Right? So David invites Avshalom back. And shortly after that, it's actually Perek Tesvav is what I want to do. Perek Tesvav. Okay. Vayim me'acharei chen vayas lo Avshalom merkavo v'susim v'chamishim ish rotzim lefanav. Now 50 people does not a rebellion make. Right? But he started slow. He started soft. He started with just a few people. All revolts start that way. You test the waters, you let people know what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. At this point, his revolt is very simple. I must be the next king. You do not want a king like the one you have now. I should be the next king. Okay? Now, what's interesting is that it says that Avshalom had 3 sons and 1 daughter. And he named her Tamar. Mm. Ah. And if he was an Ashkenazi, she must have been dead. He named the child after her. Anyway, what's interesting is that when Avshalom saw his revolt failing, it says, Vayatsev lo yad, he made for himself a memorial. Mm-hmm. We consider that to be Yad Avshalom. You ever see it?
Yeah.
You see the pictures of it, right? Yad Avshalom is like on the other side of Harabayas, and you see on the way up to the Dung Gate. So it says he set up a yad for himself, a memoriam, because he had no children. It says right here he has 4 children. Right? So it could be that these kids died in between. Right? Although from here to there is not a lot of space, but okay, it means that those children were born a while back. I don't have anything in Pshat to answer why it says he had 4 children, and then just a few next 2 stories later, it says he made himself a memoriam because he had no children. Again, it could be he had no children who survived him. At the time he built it, those kids had perished one way or another. Or it's possible that if you are a son like Avshalom, and your children see you rebel against your father, right? Stama, they didn't. What can I say? Children will behave with their parents the way they see their parents behave with their parents. Not always, but usually. Right? So when Avshalom isn't being a good son, you'll see his children won't be good. You know, won't do what they're supposed to do. Okay, it's possible that that's what it means. Right? Okay, so Vahimi Acharechen, Perek Tzvav. Vayaslo Avshalom Merkavah V'susim. He made for himself a standing army of 50 men. Okay? And this is what he would do. It says, V'yishkim Avshalom V'amad Al Yad Derech HaShar. He got up early in the morning because that's what people want to get an early court case. The Shar is where the court cases come before the king. Vayi Koho Isha She'elo Riv Lavo El HaMelech LaMishpat. When people would come out of David's court, he'd say, where are you from? I'm from one of these cities. And Avshalom would say, his complaint is that you're not getting a just situation in David's kingdom. My father has lost his eye for justice. Now, if you recall, back in chapter 3, it says David was osem mishpat utztaka l'chol amo. He was able to promulgate justice and charity to all the nation. But that's changed. Bathsheba has changed a lot. Right? David is busy with other things. And remember, I called it at the very end of last class, the Shaulization of David. He becomes another person. Right? Remember I compared it to Pinchas? Mm-hmm. Pinchas is given a brisi shalom, a bracha of harmony, of inner harmony, to protect him from whatever demons may control him as a result of that very cruel and violent act that he committed against Cosby and Zimri, right? The end of Parshas Balak. Now, it was all done l'shem shemayim, but that you could be l'shem shemayim as anything. A violent act is still a violent act. So to protect from that violent act, overcoming his inner harmony, Hashem gave him a brisi shalom, a psychological barrier against post-traumatic stress. And it would appear that David himself was protected from this trauma himself until now, right? But it was only, like I'd say Shaul also. Shaul is not protected from that after the story of Amalek, right? Because of the way he fought against Amalek for personal gain. Mm-hmm. Right? His whole inner sense of harmony changed. It says so in the Pasuk. How many times? Ruach Ra overcame him. He was melancholy. Mm-hmm. Right? As opposed to David until now, who managed very well with his warrior persona. Actually, David's true persona is not a warrior at all. It's a poet. It's a musician. Right?
He's also described as Amoni.
Im Yafei Einayim. Right. Well, Amoni, Rabbi Esav, means red-headed and hot-headed.
But there's that implication.
Yeah, David channeled that behavior into good things until the Bathsheba story. It's a big chiddush of Rabbi Avinel that when the prophet told him "Dam larov shafachta," right? He didn't tell him on the spot. The prophet never told him why he couldn't build the temple. That's only written in retrospect in Divrei Hayamim when Shlomo is talking. No reason is ever given in Sefer Shmuel why David couldn't build the temple. The prophet just tells him you can, and then the next day he tells him you can't, and David never asks. I would say that's not fair. You told me yesterday I can do this. And now you tell me I can't? At least tell me why. Well, why not? Right? Okay, so now David's inner harmony is challenged. Right? And so I'd like to claim that Avshalom's revolt had two parts to it. And then I want to move to Adoniyahu. At first, Avshalom's revolt was not against David. It was against the potential brother of his who might be a threat to the throne. You hear that? He does not want, there's no reason for him to kill his father. There's no reason for Bnei Israel to follow a person who wants to kill his father. Right? Agreed? Okay. What happens after is that, yes, sir?
I have a question. Do Do any of the abortions say that because his mother was not Jewish, nothing he did worked out in Israel? Hmm. Is that possible?
Not familiar with anything like that. His mother was a convert, the daughter of the king of Geshur. I don't know. Good question. I don't know. What happened was, though, midstream, one person convinced him, this is not going to work. Your father, I know your father is not going to appoint you as the next king. The only way for you to be the next king of Israel, and this has already gone too far, you can't go back from where you are now. The only way you'll be the next king of Israel is if you kill your father. And you have to do that. In fact, what you should do is make yourself so despised unto him is to take the 10 women he left in charge of his castle, his palace, take them up to the roof. Right? Why does he have to take them up to the roof? For people to see. Right? But there's also an irony about taking them up to the roof, which is...
But Shiva was on
the roof.
That's the same roof where he saw him. So the fact that the Tanakh felt it necessary to tell us, it's all part of the redemption of David. Just the same way as Yaakov needs some redemption for taking the bracha away from his brother in Toldos, it's all part of the redemption. And smart and possibly happy is the person who even as things are going wrong, you're able to say, I see why this is happening. It's ironic, yeah. Yes?
You mentioned before that it's not fair. It seems that that's a common theme running through. Where did everybody get an idea that the world should be fair?
I think that people hope and expect it to be fair. I think we have some very sobering books of the Bible that tell us to reassess that thought. The books like Koheles. But what they usually say is that kind deeds always catch up. There will always be something. Maybe you won't see it so quickly, but just, you know, just... Or maybe take stock in this. It's better to deserve honors than to actually receive them. As long as you know that you deserve them, and you can be humble and still feel that way. A humble man, a humble person knows that they deserve on. They can accept that they deserve honors. They just don't need to actually get them.
Right? Be like Clint.
Finally.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it's Achitophel, who is, by the way, Bathsheba's grandfather. Yeah. Bathsheba is Bathsheba bas Eliyom bas Achitophel. Eliyom ben Achitophel. All right. So Achitophel was he's a really bad guy in Chazal. Chazal do not like him. He's one of four Hedyotos that lost their Olam Haba. Right? Achitophel, it says in the Tanakh, his advice was so prescient and so on the money that it would be like asking the Urim V'Tumim when you asked him advice. Right? He wasn't a sorcerer. He was just always able to assess a situation and tell you what's the best move in backgammon, and he'll tell you what's the best, you know what I'm saying? You'll know what's in the best next move. Playing the percentages. Playing the percentages doesn't always get you to the right place, right? You can play the percentages and somehow lose out. But he was always knew how what was more likely to happen. He may take some risks sometimes. That's probably what Bilam was. Bilam was very good at assessing which side would win a war, and he was like a zona. He would sell himself to that side as a cursor, and since he was so good, everyone wanted him to be their cursor. Cursor was a very important person in the ancient world when fighting a war. It could psych out the whole other side totally, to be weak in the knee, and then just lose the battle as a self-fulfilling prophecy. Right? Until Bilam came up to a brick wall with Israel. But it seems that's what Achitophel was. So Achitophel went over to Avshalom's side and started to advise him. Right? Avshalom put his faith in Achitophel, no doubt. only at one crucial time in the battle, where now it's raging against his father, David sent a counter spy, not a spy, but like a double agent, to go to Avshalom's side and say, I am turning to the side of the next king of Israel. Avshalom, in one of the great examples in Tanakh of the kettle calling the pot black, is that the saying? He says, and the guy's name is Hushai Harki, he says, Hushai, why did you desert my father's camp? And he said, well, it makes sense for me to follow who I believe is going to be the next king of Israel. He goes, you call yourself a friend? What kind of friend are you to my father? He may have been feeling him out, but he said, no, it's I think that this, I'm not saying that such a sentiment spread throughout the camp yet, but I'm quite sure that you're going to be the next king, and I'd like to advise you. I have priceless information for you. So Avshalom calls together a meeting, and he says, what should we do now? So Achitophel's advice is, pounce tonight. Go tonight. Take thousands of men. Go tonight and kill your father. You'll be king tomorrow. This way, if you just kill the king, you won't have to kill thousands of people. You won't have to reconstruct the nation. You just kill the king and rule. But if you kill thousands of people, there will be hundreds of widows and there'll be hundreds of orphans, right? Who are going to remember that you killed off their family member. No king wants to start his reign that way, right? So just go tonight and kill your father and fartik. It's finished, right? So he says, that sounds like good advice, but let me hear what Hushai has to say. Right? So you, go ahead, you be Hushai. What do you say? And you know that David is in disarray. David is weak, he has no food, he's barefoot, he is easy pickings right now if he goes in. Hushai, bless his soul, what does he say? Listen, Achitophel is saying something very smart, but he doesn't have the information that I have. Because I just came from there. Your father is like a wounded bear protecting his cubs. He is like a lion. He calls him a lion. And he says, if you go out there tonight, he is ready to pounce on you. You know your father. He's the greatest warrior of all time. Do not go tonight. Rally your forces together. Prepare an offensive. And that'll work better. Now, when David heard that Achitophel went over to the dark side, he said a prayer to God. And this is a very instructive prayer. He didn't say, God, make Achitophel come back to my side. No, he said, God, when Achitophel advises Avshalom, please make for some kind of ishtadlus that for some reason he's not going to listen to him. It's very interesting. I hear you when Chazal say that, or you can just say that Eliyam is a different Eliyam. But the Gemara in the 8th parak in Sanhedrin, the Gemara makes a big deal about the fact that Achitophel was Bathsheba's grandfather. But it's part of just a fantastic piece of Agadita. If you do say that and you want to wonder why, if his granddaughter is Bathsheba, so it could be that he was just very, very incensed and upset about the way Bathsheba was taken from her husband to the king, and that man does not deserve to remain to be king.
So why does Avot say, David Melech Yisrael Shavol Damad Maya Chay Tofel Olish Neshin Yvarim Yachad Bilvad Minikra Reo Halafo Miyudao?
Yes, you're referring to it's based on the pasuk Nahalech Berogesh. David learned to be excited in his mitzvah doing from Achitophel. It's just an interesting characteristic that the Gemara is such a wicked person, but he loved doing mitzvahs. I think it's trying to tell us that just because someone is a performer of mitzvahs does not necessarily mean that he will be a moral person, morally upright person. But for the time being, I mean, this is a topic unto itself. If someone teaches you something, right, and it says, so you have to treat that person with respect because that person taught you, right?
Yeah.
If that person taught it to you before they turned to their wickedness, then you can learn that. You can study that. You can consider him Rebbe for that. But if you find out subsequent to having learned that thing from this Rebbe, that while the Rebbe was engaging in this wicked behavior, that's when he taught this to you, then you do not have to respect him at all. But in that case, the reason why Rabbi Meir, according to what I just said, it's a Rambam.
Yeah.
The reason why Rabbi Meir was able to continue to respect Elisha ben Avuya and even study from him was because the teachings that he had learned from Elisha ben Avuya were before he turned to to heresy. So then those teachings were not tainted by the heresy. You know what I'm saying? But but if you find out that this person was engaging in such an awful behavior, and it came to light 5 years later that while he was writing this book, he was engaging in that behavior, that book should not be studied. That book was tainted by the behavior.
Well, it's only there's an explanation, though. He's a Rimon and Klipo.
Right, right.
Klipo.
So you can say that if you know, that not all of us are like Rabbi Meir, but who's not Bikoros like Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know. Okay, but anyway, I'm falling behind. So David does not accept Achitophel's advice, and Avshalom is indeed, and as a result, Avshalom loses the battle. Do you know what Achitophel does the minute he sees that Avshalom doesn't take his advice? He commits suicide. He says, I'm so good at this that I know that if he doesn't... Achitophel. The minute he just says, Vayitzav el beso, and calmly hangs himself. Why? Because he knows, if he doesn't follow my advice, I'm going to lose. And I'd rather die before that happens, or at least my properties can be inherited by my children, rather than be killed as part of an insurrection, and then everything I own goes to the king. So he calmly, collectively, his own bucket. All right, so that puts an end to Avshalom's revolt. And David, however, when he hears about how Avshalom was, because David says to everybody that la'at li lana'ar, if you catch him, if you capture him, you bring him to me alive. He's still my son. I remember playing with him on my lap, and I do not want to have anybody harm him. Right? Now, smart or not, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The king says, I don't want anyone to harm my son. He's my son. The king can make those rules. Mm-hmm. Seems to be profoundly foolish, right? Not as far as the son is concerned, but as far as thousands upon thousands of people who follow them outside of Israel with the fear of being killed by Absalom. So remember, Yoav, don't cross Yoav in this book. One of his soldiers says, I saw Avshalom hanging from a tree from his long hair. And he goes, what's the matter with you? What did you do? Did you kill him? And he goes, no. You and I both heard that the king said, La'at li lanar, don't kill the kid, the child. He goes, what are you, crazy? Show me where he is. Right? And as soon as he shows him where he is, he says, he must have been a big, strong person because they had to do a lot of things to kill him. You couldn't look yourself. If you're squeamish, don't. So when David gets the word that Avshalom is killed, turn to chapter 18. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I should say chapter 19. Chapter
19.
Yeah. 18 is where he finds out that he's dead. And 19 is where he says... Yeah. He says, B'ni Avshalom, B'ni Avshalom, Mi yitein musi ani tachtecha, Avshalom, B'ni.
Which verse?
That's verse, the first verse. Check your test, Pasuk Aleph. And again, he says, B'melech la'at es panava, Yizak ha'melech kol gadol, B'ni Avshalom, Avshalom, B'ni. He Seven Benis. Seven Benis, five Avshaloms. All right. So Yoav tells him just a classical Shaulization line. He says, why are you making friends of your enemies and enemies of your friends? These people just risked their lives for you. And if Avshalom was alive, we'd all be dead. So how are you doing this to your people? They've come. You have to do some serious reconstruction. More than half the nation wanted someone else to be king. It may not have started out that way, but it sure as heck ended that way. Right? So this is, you have to do some reconstructing. And screaming about the loss of Avshalom, now that you've been returned to your place, is the wrong thing. Right? What's interesting is that Chazal say something David did in between this whole story is what did him in. You've got to see, Shabbos Daf Nun Vav says David did nothing wrong with Bathsheba. Ramban learns from here that he also didn't do anything wrong at the end of Shmuel Beis when he counts Bnei Yisrael. But the Gemara says, I cannot absolve. What an interesting morality issue. They find him innocent of murder, of adultery, and they work their way through all those things. But I can't find a way to absolve him for accepting Lashon Hara. The king does not lose his kingdom over adultery and murder. He loses it over Lashon Hara. What's the Lashon Hara? Is that for Tziva against Mephibosheth. Right? So we're saying Mephibosheth came to greet David without fixing his beard, and he came with his sticks, his feet were not set up properly. He's crippled. Right? And he remained in Yerushalayim with Avshalom, which could be a sign that he wanted Avshalom to win. In fact, Tziva, who was assigned to look after Mephibosheth, Tziva said that Mephibosheth was hoping that Avshalom and David would kill each other. Then where do you go? This looks like the nation is going to want to go back to Binyamin, and that's me. I'm the only surviving descendant of Shaul. I can be the next king. And David accepted this hogwash. Right? So when Mephibosheth finally goes, So because David granted Mephibosheth a field and some property, so David said, okay, the field belongs to you now, Tziva. He accepted it point blank. When Mephibosheth finally meets David, and he says, why did you remain in Yerushalayim? He goes, because I would be a burden to you. I couldn't travel. I'm crippled. You know that. And he said, why didn't you shave now that you know your king is alive? He goes, I've been mourning since the day you left Jerusalem. I haven't fixed my feet. I haven't shaved in all this time. I'm mourning for you. So David said, I don't want to speak to you anymore. Split the field. Remember, we already darshaned this. Split the field, split the kingdom. If you could speak with such bombast and impudence and so impulsively, just to say split the field without looking into it. I know your son is going to say split the child, and your grandson is going to say no, I'm not going to lower taxes, right? So that leads to Adoniyahu. In Melachim Aleph, turned to the Haftorah of Parshas Chayesara, it says that Adoniyahu, David's son. Pasuk Hey, Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey. You don't have to go too far. Malachim is right after Shmuel Ben. No, you're going too far. Malachim Aleph, chapter 1, verse 5. Adoniyahu ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani amloch. He's the oldest surviving child who wants to be king, and he says, "I will be king." Vayaslo rechev uparashim v'chamishim ish rotzim alfanav. Sound familiar?
Shalom.
V'lo atzavo aviv miyamav lemar madu akacha asisa. It sounds familiar too.
Yeah.
His father never upset him by saying, what are you doing? In other words, he was never disciplined. This is another Amnon in the making. Right? And by the way, his downfall also comes at the hands of a woman. Mm-hmm. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Tune in, it's coming up in a few minutes. So Adoniyahu claims the kingship, and it says afterwards, Ve'oso yolda acharei Avshalom. He was born right after Avshalom. You know what that means. Amnon is dead, Avshalom is dead. I'm on deck.
It's a different mother.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And he took all the important chashuva people on his side. The Kohen Gadol sided with him. Yoav sided with him. Whoa. Yeah. Can't wait for your father to die and appoint the king. So who saves the day? Batsheva. Although it's with the prompting of Natan Hanavi. He tells her to go in, and the story is actually recorded three times. It's interesting how she, you know, how it embellishes a little bit each time, but he tells her to go in and fix things. And he basically tells her, because if you don't, he's going to kill you. That's a sign of bad stuff. In other words, Adoniyahu does have a sense that it's your son who's supposed to be the next king. Well, yeah, if you read Divrei Hayamim, because in Divrei Hayamim, when it says, and my father wanted to build this temple that I just finished building. You with me? Mm-hmm. And God told him, no, because much blood have you shed. Your son named Shlomo will build this temple. Right? That's a question whether that was added on by an editor of Divrei Hayamim many years later, or did Hashem really tell that to David? In which case, of course, we have to wonder, why isn't that in Shmuel Bet? He just says, your son, who will be a man of peace. Now, Shlomo is definitely peace, but so is Avshalom.
Yeah.
Okay, so Shlomo is, the day is saved for Shlomo by Bathsheba. What shtus got into Adoniyahu? You know what? I don't know if it's shtus. Avshalom may have been shtus. Avshalom should just wait, let your father say something. But here, it's really towards the end. You know, you have a very old picture of David here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Adoniyahu just says, you know what, my father is a little lax at determining who's going to be the next king. I'm going to step into that. And, okay, of course, Bathsheba, you know what she does. But Adoniyahu makes a tactical error afterwards. It has to do with this oldness of David. He was so old that they decided to do a little Achashverosh kind of thing. You know, remember? They went to look for beautiful women, and they found one of the most beautiful in all of Israel. Her name was Avishag HaShunamit. And she would tend to David. But it says, but David was not intimate with her. So, I mean, look, the Gemara in Daf Yud Gimel in Masech, Daf Chaf Aleph in Masech Sanhedrin, the second parak. It says that she, you know, she said, listen, I'm married to the king. I know that after the king dies, I'm not allowed to marry anyone else, except possibly another king. Right? We'll get to that in a minute, if you can think of Hamlet and Macbeth. The Gemara says that she wanted that intimacy with David. And David said, no, I can't. So she said, why not? So he said, because I have to atone when I took someone I wasn't supposed to by not taking someone I can.
Where is this?
It's a Gemara. Gemara, the second parak in Masechah Sanhedrin. I have to atone for taking someone I was not supposed to by not taking someone I can. You hear that? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So now I wouldn't put these words Chas V'Shalom into her mouth, but the Gemara does. The Gemara says that she responded, oh, the ganav is too old to kill, to steal, and he says he's doing tshuva. Man, I don't mean to be tongue-in-cheek, it's the Gemara that says.
But in the pshat, in the Tanakh, he's not supposed to be, he can't do it.
In pshat, he's a very old man, whatever, you know, whatever it is. But
no, but the language implies that he's right.
So David, I mean, the Gemara gets even more creative afterwards. I'm not going to go that far here with you, but the Gemara just says that it was part of his tshuva process. The Rambam says always do tshuva when you're younger, because if you you wait too long, you know, and you're not doing it because you can't, then that's not real tshuva, right? Right. So anyway, yes, Moshe.
Hang on, an optional question. Now, he was a Nazir, a Nazirite. Was his hair burned on the altar, or was it handled in some special way?
I think that since he died as a result of his hair, he never had a chance to fulfill his Nazirus, which would mean to bring the requisite sacrifices and to cut off his hair. He never did. It seems that, I mean, in such an amazing, amazing picture of vanity. For goodness sakes, he had a sword in his side. He's hanging from the tree by a billowing blob of hair. Take his sword and slice it off, for goodness sakes. You know what I'm saying? Can you get the picture? All right, so it's part of the vanity. It's sort of like if I can say lahavdil, like Goliath. Right? Remember what I said 2 weeks ago, that Goliath was not hit here in the Metzach, he was hit in the knee, and his heavy armor bent into his knee and made him buckle. In other words, it was his very arrogance, the arrogance of his, of all that armor that did him in. So too, it was the arrogance of all these stories. And David's sins, it's an egregious sin, but the redemption comes because the redemption is, of course, in Shlomo. And Adoniyahu is undone by his desire for this Avishag after David dies. And he gets Bathsheba to ask for it. And when Shlomo hears that he wants Avishag, he goes, listen, I totally give up the kingdom to your son. But at least let me have a booby prize, right, whatever you want to call it. So he says, okay, I'll ask Shlomo for it. Now, Bathsheba probably knew how he would respond, but he killed him over this. He goes, really? Well, maybe he wants the throne too. Because remember we said the Sheet of Rabbi Yehuda last week. Mm-hmm. Only another king can have the... So it means he's pretending to be king. You don't have to read Macbeth or Hamlet to know that, right? Okay, that's what Haman Achashverosh is basically saying. Hakovish es hamalchus imi babayis, right? Okay, chaver, that's it. David's redemption, of course, is Shlomo. Maskutech Shlomo, and that closes this out. I have a plan for next year. I wrote it out already. It's on the website. Okay. Website is going to give you the material for next year. I mean, I don't know.
David, you're here.
Hello, Eric. How are you?